When we sin greatly, many of us flee from God, thinking there's no way we can ever get back into the Father's good graces. We run our races of life on tough terrain, finding out that sin takes us where we really don't want to go. When we get weary enough, some of us make the crucial choice to return to the Father no matter what. Today, the journey home begins. Stay with us. From Chicago's Moody Church, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Today, Erwin Lutzer continues his series on After You've Blown It, Reconnecting with God and Others. We're in Luke chapter 15, tracing the story of a prodigal son who is finally hungry enough to come home to his waiting father.
It was George MacDonald, who was a friend of C.S. Lewis, who said that when a child leaves home, he comes home because he's hungry, but he needs his mother more than he does his supper. And certainly this boy needed his father more than he did a full stomach, but at least it's the empty stomach that is bringing him home. And he comes home to be filled. I believe it was C.S. Lewis who said that when he was converted, he thought that he was being converted to a place, but then he realized that he's being converted to a person, and it was that was transforming. And it was because this boy knew that the Father loved him, that it was that fact that gave him the permission to come back home. And he makes a speech that he's going to give to his father. Along the way, he rehearses it, and it says, first of all, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. Somewhere along the line, this boy learned some good theology. All of our sin is always first and foremost against God, and only secondarily against others. So he says, Father, I've sinned against heaven, and I've sinned against you. And then he says, I am no more worthy to be called your son. Make me as a hired servant. And so with that in his mind and heart, he begins the long trip back to the Father. Meanwhile, back home, the Father has lost all interest in the business. There are times when the Father puts down the tools and his eyes scan the horizon because he's looking for his wayward child. And he thinks to himself, I wonder if maybe he's run out of resources in the far country. I wonder whether he will ever come home. Because even though the boy has left the father's farm, the boy has not left the father's heart. And someone told me one time, and I believe it is true, that a father can only be as happy as his saddest child. And so even though the farm seems to be prospering, the father's mind is somewhere else. And one day as he puts down the tools, he looks in the distance. And in the Greek text, when it says he saw him when he was yet a great way off, it's the same word as the far country, which leads us to believe that the father was actually scanning the horizon, looking as far as he possibly could into the far country to see whether or not he might find his boy. He sees a dot in the distance, and the dot begins to get closer and closer. And as he sees the boy coming toward him, suddenly he picks out his features and he runs toward him. And the boy has practiced his speech and he says, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you, and am no more worthy to be called your son. But he can't finish it. He can't finish the words, make me as one of your hired servants, because suddenly he is smothered with kisses. And the father says, bring Heather the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his finger and shoes on his feet, and bring the fatted calf and kill it. For this my son was dead and is alive and is lost and is found. The Pharisees who were listening to the parable that Jesus told were saying, that's stupid. How can a man love a boy with the smell of pigs on him? How do you love a boy like that? But the father answers by saying, just let me put my arms around him. At this point in the parable, there are two lessons that we should remember for wayward sons. The first lesson is simply this, that the father awaits and longs for the return of all of his wayward sons and daughters. Oftentimes it is our sin that drives us away from God, and we think, well, God is so mad at us, he doesn't want me back, and we don't understand that by staying away, we're hurting God. We're hurting him because he loves us, and he delights in his children, and he wants fellowship with us, and all the reluctance is not on his side. None of the reluctance, I should say, is on his side. All of the reluctance is on our side. We are the ones who think, well, the Father doesn't want me back. Forgetting that the Father does want us back. And if you are here today as a backslidden Christian, I want you to know that if you're out of fellowship with the Father, that you're not just hurting yourself. You're also hurting the Father who loves you and sent his Son to redeem you. But there's a second lesson that we learn, and that is that the Father abundantly blesses his wayward sons. He abundantly blesses his wayward sons. One commentator I read said that he struggles with this parable because he says the parable does not have the cross. The parable doesn't say anything about Jesus Christ needing to die before the Father can forgive. Well, I think that the cross is implied, because when the Father says, bring hither the best robe, that is the robe of righteousness that is given to those who believe in Jesus. In fact, it seems as if the right robe, the special robe, may be the Father's own robe that he's going to give to his wayward boy. And then he says, bring hither the ring symbolic of power and status, and then put shoes on his feet. No slave was ever allowed to wear shoes, only sandals. The Father was saying, you're not going to be a hired servant. You're going to be my son. And I'm going to kill for you the fatted calf, and we're going to have a party. We're going to have a big party because you've come home. Why is it that the Father was so anxious to bless his boy? The reason is because the Father is, after all, very generous. And the Father saw in the boy an opportunity. An opportunity. He found someone who wanted the robe and the ring and the shoes. And the Father loves to give to those who are destitute, those who come back to him with nothing in their hand except failure to present him. But the Father loves them, and the Father reinstates them, and the Father blesses them. Now it's at this point that we are introduced to someone else in the family. It's the elder son. He's the boy, you know, who has been working from early in the morning until late at night. He is the one to whom and for whom the farm prospers. He's the kind of person who's dependable. If he says he's going to do it, he does it. He's working late. He comes home and he hears the party before he even sees the party. Because the Bible says that as he drew near, he heard the sound of music and dancing. And so he calls one of the servants and says, what is going on? And the servant says, well, he says, you know, your younger son has come back and the father has killed the fatted calf. He's throwing a party because of your brother. We might expect him to say, oh, that's so wonderful, and rush into the house and throw his arms around his younger brother and say, welcome back. I've been praying for you. We've been missing you. But he doesn't do that. Because one of the things that we learn about the elder brother is this. Though he is busy in the father's work, the elder brother does not share the father's heart. The elder brother does not delight in the salvation of his younger brother. The elder brother is judgmental. He's a Pharisee. He's a bean counter. And what the elder brother is interested in is so many years of work, so many years of reward. He can't understand this business of God being generous to people who are destitute. He doesn't get it. He's the kind who says, how can God possibly bless him? Look at that. He's divorced. How can God bless him? How can God bless somebody who has spent time in jail? How can God bless somebody? Look at the home that they're from. Look at how dysfunctional. Look at the alcoholism, look at the abuse, look at the father who ran off with somebody else. And God is going to bless this child? How can he do it? You see, because even though the elder brother happens to be busy on the father's farm, and even though he is a son, he is actually living like a slave. And so when he meets the father on the back porch, the elder son, with all of the resentment that had been stirring in his heart for years, unloads on the old man. And he says to him, "Lo, these many years have I served you, and I never transgressed any of your commandments, and yet you never gave me a goat that I could have a party with my friends. But as soon as this thy son has come, who has devoured thy living with prostitutes, you've killed for him the fatted calf." I want you to notice a few things about that speech. First of all, you'll notice that he says the younger son devoured the living with harlots, prostitutes. We're not told that explicitly, but the elder brother knows that that's what he'd be doing if he had the nerve to leave the farm. There's something else about that speech, and that is that he distances himself from his younger brother. He says, as soon as this thy son is come. Somebody complaining about a church member at Moody Church said to me one time, instead of saying, you know what that dear brother did? He did this and this. He said, you know what one of your members did at Moody Church in your church? Well, he's a brother in Christ. I guess we all do that. I remember sometimes coming home and my wife would say, you already know what she would say. She'd say, do you know what your oldest daughter did today? This is Pastor Lutzer. My friend today, perhaps you are the elder brother. You are busy in the Father's work, but you are not sharing the Father's heart. It may well be, in fact, that you are resentful when those younger brothers come home who have wasted their substance, who've lived a life of sin. And you say to yourself, why is it that God blesses these young Christians the way he does, when I've served him for so many years and I am lacking a blessing? Well, my dear friend, I want to remind you that the father told the elder brother, everything that I have is yours. Open your eyes to the privileges of sonship. And by the way, for those of you who are in the far country today and you're scared to come home because you know that you're going to be judged by all those elder brothers in the church, whatever you do, don't let other believers and their judgmentalism, don't allow that to keep you from coming home where you belong. I urge you today to leave the place where you are in your rebellion and in your sin and hurry home. The Father is waiting, and eventually the Father will take care of the elder brother for you. His arms are open to receive you at this moment.
Thank you, Dr. Lutzer. Dr. Erwin Lutzer has brought part two of The Waiting Father, the first of six messages on what to do after you've blown it, reconnecting with God and others. Tomorrow, tune in for some final thoughts on what it means to come home. Running to Win comes to you from Chicago's Moody Church to help you understand God's roadmap for your race of life. Our current series can be yours on CD, cassette, and MP3, and also it's in print as a Multnomah Life Change book. For full information, call toll-free at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Ask about the series after you've blown it when you call. Your letters are always welcome. Write to Dr. Lutzer at Running to Win, 1609 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. To learn about all of our ministry resources, visit our website. You'll find us at runningtowin.org. Please don't forget, this broadcast is supported by listeners just like you. This is Dave McAllister. Join us for tomorrow's Running to Win.